Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. It's only round two and Essendon is already in crisis. Josh Barnes here on the Code AFL show with Ed Burke and Daniel Cherney. Ed, you're at Essendon. Let's get straight into it. You were there 2 days ago. Is the place burning down yet?
Yeah, welcome back, Josh. Pretty calm feel at Essendon. It did help that they had this sort of roller door up in the section where we went for the press conference with Kyle Langford, and they rolled it all the way down to kind of keep the media inside a bit while the players were just going about their business in the cafe. But there was still some left in the cafe when we got in there to file our stories. And it was interesting that the groups that formed in some of the booths around us.
Yeah. Well, what did you see there? Any sort of ructions in the playing group?
No ructions. No visible or audible ructions amongst the group. But did see the midfielders gathering together. So Zach Merritt, Darcy Parrish were in a booth with Elijah Sardis. And I think Archer Day-Wicks was the fourth member of that group, but I can't confirm that. And then Ben Mackay was having a coffee with Lewis Hayes. So talking a bit of trade. Hayes is still a couple of months away off that ACL injury, but he could be a pretty important addition to their backline the way they're going at the moment.
Yeah, of course. Essendon is potentially burning down after what was a disastrous first 2 weeks. Cherney, you've seen a fair bit of footy in your time. Two rounds in, is this the earliest we've seen a team almost capitulating after that horror loss to Port Adelaide?
Well, the mind thinks back to Carlton last year, which was after a half against Richmond.
Yeah.
It was on for young and old then, and of course they famously cancelled their SEN membership day.
Mm.
So
infamously.
So it's probably never too early. I mean, Wayne Schimmelbusch, beg your pardon, was sacked in the preseason 1993. So it's all happened before, but it's right up there in terms of the concern so early in the season. I think the other thing these days now, Barnsley, is that the seasons go for so long that there's a long way to go for Essendon. It just shapes as just a very, very long year, and then you've got both the sort of relatively short medium term compounding effect of the fact that they lost their last 13 last year, and then needless to remind anyone that they haven't won a final for 21 years and haven't won a premiership for 26 now.
Yeah.
That there's just, like, it'd be one thing if you were if this was happening when you were rebuilding, like in a Richmond or West Coast situation, but for it to happen to a club that is sort of rebuilding off nothing, it's incredibly disheartening for Essendon fans, and they are wondering, how has it got to this again, and how are we going to endure another year of this?
Yeah, it feels like a lot of deja vu. Ed, as we said, you were there for a Kyle Langford presser as well as checking out who was drinking coffee with who. It sounds like there was a lot of movement around the leadership group already 2 rounds in, and a familiar face found himself back in the door.
Yeah, so we had to kind of take a second look after he mentioned that Zach Merritt had been invited into the leadership group, and the reporters there in the room sort of just nodded along, and then I think one was just like, hang on, Merritt was back in the group. He was taken out, so he wasn't only stripped of the captaincy, he was taken out of the whole leadership group. It turns out Essendon like to rotate players through their leadership group. Langford was saying they do it for younger players' development. It would be one of the most crucial leadership group meetings of the season, you'd think. So probably a good call to get Merritt in there for his take. I think that they need to make sure that he's invested in what happens in the next few weeks. And on the field, they've definitely got to make sure he's invested, because those star midfielders need to help their team defend the ground.
Yeah, we talked about you mentioned those star midfielders, and I think that was part of the problem on the weekend, that the senior players weren't up to scratch. The coach has been blamed already. Is it the players or the coach? What are we feeling is the biggest at blame after disaster in Port Adelaide?
I mean, look, it's always both, but I think the players are underperforming. I don't necessarily think that Brad Scott has made every post a winner by any stretch. Mm. I think, he's been central to some of this management decisions, which have been very questionable too. But ultimately, the lack of cohesion and two-way running defensively and just defensive structure organisationally has looked very, very poor, and they are just not getting. I mean, you look man for man, that team should not be losing by that much to Port Adelaide. They're not a good list, Essendon. They're certainly not a top six, top ten list, but they're not the type of list that should be losing so convincingly to Port Adelaide, who have their own issues so early in the season, and just to be capitulating at this point. I know that they do have a fair bit of youth in there as well, which, and to a degree, there's sort of a weakest link element to that, so that if you have young players that aren't necessarily following the game plan in terms of defensive positioning, it can look worse than it actually is, and it may only be one or two positioning moves that are actually going wrong. But ultimately, I think it is the likes of Peter Wright. Now, I know the football hasn't been down there much, and Kyle Langford, Darcy Parrish, I think, ultimately, as a player who's an All-Australian and a very, sign of lucrative long-term deal, he's got to be, getting more out of himself, and several others that have to own up and say they have just not been good enough.
Well, we'll go through the numbers in a moment with champion data's Corey Mobilio, but Journey, it's been a long slog. We've already talked about deja vu. How much of the past is still hanging over Essendon and decisions made by people that are long gone?
Well, this was so well covered by our colleagues, Glenn McFarlane and John Ralph, in Essendon, The Lost Years, which is still available.
Yep.
If you're a
listen now.
Good
listen
plug.
Now.
Strong
thank,
plug.
Thank you.
I'm on my third re-listen at the moment.
Right, you need to get out more. But and you were just been in the Olympics. But no, look, in all seriousness, there's obviously these huge historical burdens that this club carries. I mean, the central figures of, Kevin Sheedy, James Hird, and Adrian Dodoro are hard to completely escape from. Hird, somewhat, obviously the most, he and Sheedy, similarly historically significant, but playing different roles. Sheedy sort of is this now elderly, sort of somewhat pantomime character who hovers around and says somewhat provocative things, but people say, ha ha, yeah, Sheeds, whatever, but there's sort of an element of truth there. Hird in his media roles, where he's quite articulate and a good footy brain, and sort of just needling a bit, and then it's sort of almost, it's a bit of a, what's the dog whistle sort of to the masses to sort of get the old Essendon crowd back. You've got this weird dynamic now with Dean Solomon, who, as the old age goes, is a widely respected footy person and has gone to other clubs and is not a purely Essendon person. Was at Freo, was at Gold Coast, was at the Giants, but back having gone from the board. So there's such a strange dynamic. There's always been this sense that Scott was the outsider. I mean, he was infamously dubbed the visitor at Arden Street by David King. And there's an element of that now too at the Hangar, where he just doesn't seem to have been really embraced by the old Essendon guard. Really, that was from day one when Kevin Sheedy went on record saying that he voted for James Hird.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I mean, I think you're always going to be arguably doomed from there. That's a very hard place to come back from.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to do. Now, speaking of work, Journey, I'm booting you out of that chair. I'm going to throw to myself, and through the magic of vodcasting, Corey will be popping into that chair, sparkling, in just a second. That's enough of the intangibles and the coffee chat. Let's get into the serious numbers. We've brought in the second smartest man in football, Corey Mobilio. One spot behind Ed Burke, one spot ahead of Daniel Cherney, I would say, in the rankings. But we'll work that out as we go. Essendon is bad, Corey. Just how bad are they?
Yeah, there's obviously no sugarcoating their last 2 weeks, and more so defensively. So whether it be their defensive 50, the pressure, transition, turnover. So just the facts here. So they've conceded 278 points over the last 2 weeks. It's their second worst two-week stretch since 2012. Conceded 182 points from turnover, worst two-week stretch by any side since 2022. And they've conceded 48 marks inside 50, which is the fourth worst two-week stretch by any side over the last 10 years. And, you just have to look back to that fourth quarter on Sunday, where the pressure went completely out of the contest. It dropped to 120, their pressure rating in that fourth quarter, which, you just don't see a number that low. I think we have to be realistic, and with the Essendon chat around, I don't think, you guys, and I certainly didn't have him in a top 10 or winning a final card or a wild card or playing.
Weren't in my top 10, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it's just more the marginal games. And for so long, this Essendon team, not only under Brad, just haven't been able to defend. So since the turn of the millennium, every premier have been top six defensively for points against. Essendon haven't been top six in 11 consecutive years. 17 of the last 21 premiers have ranked top six for defending ball movement. Essendon have never ranked top six on record for that measure.
Staying true to their identity, aren't they? Not being able to defend ball movement. People are saying, what's the brand? Well, That has been the brand, unfortunately, for the Bombers.
Perhaps that's the Essendon edge. We got Corey to look back over Brad Scott's history, and it's not pretty in terms of defensive numbers. Even though they made a couple prelims at North and he had a decent record there, still defensively, they weren't much chop at the Roos.
Yeah, like these are the facts. So just looking at the 13 season, so we'll just park 26 due to sample size.
Yeah.
So just ranking top six defensively for points against, zero from 13 seasons. Score per inside 50 against, one from 13 seasons. And defending ball movement, also one from 13 seasons. So that's just ranking top six.
Yeah, not great again, Ed. Is that a Brad Scott issue or is that an Essendon issue now? Because I think Essendon fans don't mind losing. They know where the club's probably at in terms of refreshing the list. But just the manner of the way they lose, the way they get opened up over and over again, it must be very frustrating.
Well, the coaching staff would have changed drastically over the years that they've been this, you know, bottom six defensive team or been unable to be in the top bracket. So I think you just put that down to coincidence. They've had several different coaching groups who haven't been able to get it right. Maybe there is some kind of attitude thing there at the club that's managed to stick around this long and affect their ability to defend as a team. But yeah, those numbers just seem to be, I think it's just a bit of misfortune from an Essendon fans' perspective that they've never been able to get this right.
Yeah, even accidentally. Sometimes you just luck into teams missing goals.
You can chance upon, like, imagine you just have a crack at some kind of zone and you accidentally invent the new Clarko's cluster and then all of a sudden you keep the teams to 10 goals. How has that not happened in 20 years at the Bombers?
Yeah, at some stage they might fall into it. I guess the pendulum of blame has sort of swung around a little bit throughout this week after that putrid effort against Port Adelaide. Part of it's been on the coach and his press match conference, and that has been dissected to the nth degree. And then the blame has sort of shifted to the senior players. Corey, a lot of them didn't play that well on the weekend, I thought. Any numbers onto how much they struggled, those top liners?
Yeah, so I'm looking at Parrish, Dersma, McGrath, Langford, Fiorini, all outside the top 25 players on the ground for their impact through ball use. Again, like, and you know, cast an eye forward to Saturday night. If North Melbourne get a run on around stoppage, they will, using your words, light this team up from stoppage. That is their strength, but you know, led by Cherry in the ruck, LDU, Finn O'Sullivan, Sheasel, these likes. If they get a run on from stoppage, watch out.
Yeah.
Massive responsibility for the midfield group if Brad Scott sticks with the rotation he had last week, which was Merritt, Caldwell, Parrish, Durham, Archie Roberts. Those are five of Essendon's best seven or eight players who'll be out there on Saturday night. They really need to at least level it in the middle for them to be a chance, don't they?
Definitely.
Tristan Cherry, I think 196 super coach points for those players out there on the weekend. He's cupping him against Lockie Blackiston this week. I'll be putting a very thick captain's armband on him if I had him in my team. Yeah. I'm trying to scramble to get him in at the moment.
He's struggled a little bit in the first couple of weeks, Lockie Blackiston. He looked really capable over the preseason. Hopefully he settles in, but at the moment that's a bit of a worry for them because Nick Bryan's still, I think, more than a month away.
Yeah, desperate to get him back and they don't have a lot of other options there. Is there any positives, please, Corey? I'm sure the Essendon fans are still listening. Yeah. Stay tuned, Essendon fans. Do we have anything that we can sort of give them some kind of hope?
Yeah, I look at the two forwards in Caddy. So he was the youngest Essendon player since Joe Danaher in 2014 to kick four plus goals in a game. And then Kakko. So give me this output every week and I'm sure the goals and behinds are going to swing. 11 disposals, six shots on goal for a return of one goal four. So he obviously had a poor day in front of the sticks, but I think you can take a lot of positives with those two moving forward.
Yeah, hopefully I can shore up the defence. I'm sure Jacob Farrow has to be very close to a debut after dominating the VFL in a big loss. So he might replace Mason Redmond in defence. So he might have some moves around there. Any more Essendon thoughts, Ed, or are you Essendon out?
I just wanted to ask you, Corey, when Port Adelaide was stat padding in the final quarter of that game, do you guys barrack for that in the office? Do you like to see some stat padding, or does it annoy you because it throws out your numbers?
No, well, the game goes quicker, so it's in transit, so I'm always for a quick quarter. But and then you obviously have the super coach hat on as well, so like free points and whatnot. So a bit of a catch 22.
Yeah, come on down, Jack Watkins, in that last quarter he was taking over there. Quickly before we boot you out and get Daniel Cherney back in, the number three smartest man in football, Cherney, waiting at the door to get back in. Two big games to start the round, Thursday and Friday. Thursday, Adelaide goes to Geelong. They'll be without Jordan Dawson, no Taylor Walker, so a bit depleted. But you've had a bit of a lens on Shannon Neal, who came alive in the second half as Geelong did against Fremantle two weeks ago.
Off the back of that Fremantle game, so career high five goals, enjoys getting back down to the Catteries, kicked three plus goals in each of his last three matches down there. I think for him, like he's closing in on that 50 game mark, and there's so much room and scope to improve from a 1-on-1, but we know what he does. And, you know, when he got up and about in that Fremantle game, there was a bit of swagger about him, and he was, you know, he can take marks 2-3 deep. And he is a bit of a barometer. So when he finishes a game as a top 5 rated player on the ground since the start of last year, Geelong is 6-0. So he's going to draw a good matchup on Thursday night. Jordan Butts, who's had, you know, been really good. Mm. He's held the likes of Mackay, Georgiades, Lynch, Sam Darcy last week. He's at, you know, traditional, you know, chest to back, keep your opposition player grounded. I think it's going to be a really good challenge for Neil to not only relieve a bit of pressure from Cameron, but give him a focal point forward of the ball. And again, Butts last week, 8 intercept mark. So he did it not only defensively, but with his aerial presence as well.
Couple of changes to the Geelong forward line in that game. We've got mail unconfirmed that Brad Close has been dropped. He's played 121 of the last 126 games for the Cats, so that's an interesting one after just 2 rounds.
Yeah, it looks like he'll be out. Patrick Dangerfield will miss with a calf as well, so 2 changes in that forward line for the Cats. So they're going to be retooling, and a lot of it will, without Tyson Stengel as well, a lot of it will probably land on Shannon Neal and Jeremy Cameron. So those two need to deliver. And GWS comes to Marvel Stadium on Friday night. Toby Green will be there to take on Collingwood. What are your thoughts on him so far this year?
Yeah, just want to, like, the move to him being a midfielder, I've got no issues with, but it's now the flow-on effect when he's in there. So GWS are minus 40 points per 100 minutes when he's a midfielder, and they're minus 17 center clearances over 2 rounds, which is, you know, stacking up to be one of their worst 2-week stretches in their history. So I'm more shifting to the likes of Cornelio and O'Halloran and Rouston to pick up the slack in there. You know, move Green forward. We saw Green last year when they targeted him inside 50. He was the most effective target in the competition in terms of GWS generating a score. So, again, I had no problems him going forward and going into the midfield and GWS trying something different. But I think they're losing a bit too much now in that forward half of the ground. The other name I'm going to throw up is Lockie Ash. So they've got, you know, plenty of halfback depth waiting in the wings. You know, give it a couple more weeks, and if not, we saw Ash under Leon Cameron be a midfielder, be a bit of a tagger at times. I think he's a name that can elevate his game and go into the engine room a bit more.
I'm a big believer in Lockie Ash, the midfielder, because he's never really been able to do it off the leash. He was a tagger when he was in there. I'm not sure his foot skills are necessarily that suited to playing half back, but he can drive his legs and get the ball long. I do reckon he's really suited to playing in a centre stoppage. They've got Whitfield, they've got Joe Fonte, they've got other guys who can come off half back.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Ed's just held on to the smartest man in football, Corey, but you're getting close. Maybe next week.
Next week.
Always time. Thank you for coming in. As always, get back to the numbers.
Thanks for having me.
All right, the third smartest man in football is back in his seat, Daniel Cherney. Welcome back to the couch. Let's move on to another coach who potentially is on the hot seat alongside Brad Scott. Michael Voss. I might have been happy they had a bit of a bye this week. His Carlton side will be the last game of the weekend against Melbourne. This is going to be an important game for Michael Voss, as they all are, Ed. The Blues had a long time to recoup and get ready after a miserable first 2 weeks, really. What are we expecting from them?
I think we need to remind everyone that the heat that Carlton and Michael Voss were under 17 days ago, last time they played. It's been an interesting build-up to this game. They've sort of had to simulate a match in the middle of this break to try and be match fit for this clash against Melbourne on Sunday. The thing they do have working in their favour is the D's are coming back from Perth, so they might have heavy legs. That's what the Blues will be hoping. But trying to turn around these second half form issues is going to be difficult for them. They had 3 days off after the game against the Tigers. They had Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. There was a team dinner in there, we believe. Mark Pidnett mentioned yesterday. Haven't been able to work out where that was yet, but I'll get back to you on that. They've had a regular week on the track that first week on the break. It built up into a really intense hit out on Friday, from what we're told. So it was behind closed doors. They didn't have any of their track watchers picking little holes in how they were training. But they had a pretty full match simulation. You obviously can't capture the intensity of an AFL game, but they had a crack on Friday, a couple more days off, and then into a full week of training in the build-up to this game.
Yeah, you mentioned those second-half fade-outs. I think we wonder often on the outside whether clubs ignore them and hope that they get better themselves, or whether they dissect them completely. Carlton has been dissecting those for 6 months plus for an entire year. They have been going through them with a fine-tooth comb, and nothing seems to be fixing. So whether that's the coach message not getting through, whether it's the players in their own head and they're thinking about it too much, it could be an issue this week, because Melbourne, at least in the first game they played against St Kilda, they ran all over the Saints at the end of that game. They're playing a new running style, which we hadn't seen at all under Simon Goodwin, and it is a bit of a mismatch of styles, I think, the way Melbourne is trying to run versus Carlton's slow plotting style, which they're slowly trying to fix. And these first these next 2 weeks are vital, I think, for Michael Voss. He's got Melbourne that they probably should beat. I think the tips would maybe be 50-50. And they've got Good Friday against North Melbourne after that, which they probably have to bank two wins because the Heat's probably going to come following that with Adelaide away, Collingwood, Fremantle away, St Kilda, Brisbane away, Western Bulldogs and Port Adelaide on their slate after that. So if he doesn't bank two wins here, I'm not sure how many wins he's going to get in that next group after that. So this is a crucial time for Michael Voss. And there are people around Carlton who believe that the leash, I suppose, that the rope is not that long for Voss, that he might get yanked if those things go bad very early in the season. So he needs to be winning and Carlton need to be winning, and they probably need to beat Melbourne this week.
Oh, I think ultimately when you go into season with a coach out of contract, it's every week, a particular coach that's sort of, you know, into his fifth season and, you know, his second club, and a club a bit like Essendon, which we touched on earlier, which has now had a historically successful club, which has had a long run of outs. Each week is a referendum on Michael Voss and whether that's fair or not. It is the case. And, you know, there's only two ways for this to end. Either they extend him or they get rid of him. And that's not a healthy position, particularly when you have brought in a lot of new players. We're at a level, you know, there was a sense of regeneration where it was a step back to go step forward. But that doesn't really, I feel like, now they will say that it is, but for me, looking from the outside, those two things do not align. Having a coach in the final year of your contract and a team that's sort of half rebuilding on the run without going full rebuild, that doesn't really work. You've either sort of could be the foot in one camp or the other. At the moment, they're half pregnant. They dodged a massive bullet with that Richmond. I mean, I know, Ed, you said earlier that we would have, you know, easy to forget that Carlton were battling. No one would have forgotten had they lost to Richmond. That would have been a massive 2 weeks.
If Tom Lynch could hit the side of the barn.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, they got there, and ultimately that was just the pressure valve release that they needed. They've been able to, you know, go and do their work behind the scenes over the last couple of weeks, hopefully get a few of these things right for their sake. But, yeah, it won't take a lot, as you touched on, with that run coming up, for things to go very quickly awry again.
Yeah, there are a couple of big games that we've obviously spoken about at length here, Essendon v North Melbourne and Carlton v Melbourne. I made the two of you sort of think about things and think about who is, I guess, the biggest loser from the weekend, who needs to win the most out of those four sides. I'd say probably Melbourne be at the bottom of the table for that for each of us, but Essendon, North and Carlton, don't forget about where North Melbourne's sitting after what was a really disappointing, I guess, second half against the West Coast on Sunday. They probably need a win as well. So those three sides, it's going to be pretty tough for them this weekend.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that the D's probably have the least on the line. They've got the protection of a first-year coach. They've just had a trip to Perth. They looked exciting in round one. So they've bought themselves a bit of time to get up and going. I do think North Melbourne really don't want to be losing this game. It's probably a difficult time to get Essendon when it feels like a must-win clash for the Bombers, but they really shot themselves in the foot last week not being able to get that win on the road. Two wins in a row would have been a great way to start their season and get some form of momentum, but instead there's serious frustration there because their senior players just sort of faded out of that game against the Eagles. I think that North Melbourne probably wants this more badly than Essendon. All the noises around the Bombers and how dysfunctional they've been, this would be really bad if North Melbourne lost that game on Saturday night.
Yeah, Essendon needs to be competitive. North Melbourne needs to win. So there is sort of a happy medium there. If North win narrowly, then everyone's sort of just a little bit happy. Whereas if it's a blowout to North, then Essendon sort of crisis continues, and if it's Essendon gets up, then North are sort of plunged into that territory pretty quickly, despite all the optimism of round one. And then I suppose with Carlton, you know, Melbourne, the pressure is a very different situation because of all that's released when you stack the coach. But for Carlton, certainly a heavy defeat to Melbourne would place them probably in a greater level of scrutiny than either Essendon North could into this weekend.
Yeah, I think to your point, Ed, that sort of Essendon's had the heat on them this week. I'm not sure how much more heat you can't keep dialing it up at some point.
We can try. We'll try.
It reaches almost its maximum. And Carlton, as you said, Cherney, is almost a week-to-week thing. So we're expecting sort of those up and downs. But North has almost not escaped it so far, but they haven't really copped it yet. So a loss here to Essendon, given that Essendon's running. If they don't deliver North, I think they're going to be really under pressure because there is another question mark about the coach of that club, I think, too, unless things turn around pretty quickly. So there'll be a hot seat there. Now time for my favourite subject, the segment, quick hands. Speaking of hot seats, there was a couple in either end of the country earlier this season when Chris Fagan started a fire with St Kilda. Now they meet this week. Cherney, you've been keeping a very close eye on this spat between the two clubs. Can we expect fireworks Are you going to give us fireworks?
Oh, look, I don't think there'll be fireworks on the field per se.
Who's right in this argument?
I think everyone's wrong. look, I think Chris Fagan's argument, I get the basic principle that you want to see the best players rewarded, but you also got to appreciate that there are market forces at play. Not to mention that, you know, St Kilda weren't the first club to offer, you know, overs for a player. And ultimately, if each club has the salary cap, then, you know, you've got to pay it somehow. And if St Kilda wants to pay Tom De Koenig over and above, well over and above what he's worth, well, let them, you know, lie in that bed.
Yeah, a lot of people are almost ridiculing them paying that much for De Koenig and for Nazara as well as a $2 million player. And now suddenly they're complaining that that's affected the rest of us.
Yeah, I mean, Brisbane... you know, Brisbane now concerned about the prospect of losing Zach Bailey. Well, you, if you bring in free agents, you run the risk of not, you know, having as much cap space to keep yours. That's just the, that's the craft of list management. Brisbane have done an exceptional job overall with their list management. They've had some benefits, clearly, but you also have to take advantage of them, which other clubs haven't necessarily done. So I think overall St Kilda has talked a bigger game. And you know, this whole idea that, I remember Andrew Bassett's comments recently on SEN, where he said, you know, now, you know, when we were down the bottom, no one was sort of, well, you're sort of still down the bottom. You haven't actually done anything yet. You finished sixth, seventh bottom last year. You're not back up the bottom, back up from the bottom yet. Yes, they're having a bit of a crack, which you can admire, but it's not as though they're sort of, they're not respected yet. Maybe they're a little bit, they're annoying people. So everyone's a bit, you know, everyone's just self-interested and is trying to best position themselves for their own best results, which is obviously the nature of competition.
I had a flag for you to fly here for St Kilda. We just had one in the cupboard for some reason. But it turns out it was a pretty measured take.
Yeah, so well, it's unfortunately measured, away. I think, Cherny.
Yeah, she got my little lion toy.
Having spoken to people involved in this at both clubs, particularly when it kicked off, I think there is genuine sort of angst at each other. And I think it is one of those things where both clubs will think they're in the right because they did the right thing by themselves. St Kilda can argue that they did the right thing with De Koenig and all the money they spent. That was the right thing to do what they think is right. Brisbane thinks it's wrong, but part of that is because they're trying to safeguard themselves from a player that's wanting to leave. It's always, there's always other bits at play. I think they are generally, I don't know if angry is the right word, but they're not happy with each other. But this has been a long gestating feud given the issues with the draft and academies and all that sort of stuff. So it just added more heat to it. Does it matter who wins, Cherny? Will either club sort of claim some kind of moral victory on the field?
The economic cup, who wins?
Well, the economy's in dire straits, just as an aside. But, yeah, we're talking economics here.
Yeah.
But it matters on the field for sure because Brisbane's 0-2, and while they have won a premiership from 0-3 in recent times, it's still a fair way back. And for the Saints, you know, they'll probably, they won't get many better opportunities to beat a back-to-back reigning premier, given that they have still have some key outs. Even the youngster, Dan Annable, now missing 4 months with shoulder surgery. So, it matters, because the pressure, so I think one thing that St Kilda has done, and I get a bit annoyed at some other St Kilda supporters who sort of don't understand why people are coming at St Kilda now. Yes, you have money and you have to spend it, fine. But if you actively engage in a player movement period like that, of course there's going to be more attention on you. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But don't then say, oh, you know, the scrutiny is unfair. It's completely fair. And you open yourself up to it. So they need to perform this week and they've got a very good chance to beat the Brisbane Lions, I think, because the Lions are still gettable.
I think serious finals contenders have to beat Brisbane while they're down. Yeah. Once Brisbane's organised again and they've got their best players back on the park, it's going to be so difficult to get over them. You've got to take advantage of your opportunities at this point in the season.
Yeah, particularly at home, it's your one chance to sort of bank that win against them. Very quickly, as we're starting to run out of time, it is still March, so it is kind of technically cricket season. Cherny, you'll be at the Shield final all week. Would you have picked Elliott or Perry?
Perry, actually, just, but I mean, it was very, very, and it was a brutal call either way. I probably just gone Perry just for probably a bit more long-term form and pecking order, but like, gee, that would have meant Elliott as unlucky as ever. So I don't know how we're talking about this in a footy show, but we are.
Who wins? Vic or SA?
Vic should win.
Are you confident, Ed, that we'll be celebrating a Vic? Well, surely we get the day off on Monday with a ticker tape parade or something.
I've been reading a story about Nathan McSweeney's excellent off spin.
Yeah, I'm worried.
Now I'm worried, yeah. With their two spinners, Menenti and McSweeney. Yeah. The two right-arm offies, we might struggle.
It's got me stressed, but we'll have a full breakdown of Nathan McSweeney's new off-spin action and his juice right next week on the Code AFL show, and maybe some footy as well. We'll be back then. Make sure you check out everything that's going on at codesports.com.au. Plenty of action and previews for footy leading into the weekend.
This is Bayard Winthrop, founder of American Giant. We make all our clothing right here in the U.S. with American cotton and American workers. Get 20% off your first order when you use code GIANT20 at American-Giant.com.